just the bench is strong.
I told him I'd do my tour of people this.
That's
all.
Now they're trying to change our retirement benefits. And today is my day of changing from cover my ass to kick my ass to. And so I'm that close to wanting to take away the benefits. So
how can he do that?
I don't know.
Are you?
In the 85, they gave us 10% a year, but no, 4% a year, 3% a year for every year you work for the town to hold your health care.
I turned it on just for a couple of minutes just to see if you could actually hear it.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
Was it?
Yeah.
I don't know if we could pick it up.
They didn't start it until Bob opened the meeting, so all was good.
Okay.
So no side conversations.
Well, you conversation, didn't you?
No side conversations were recorded. So the fact that Mike was strong on me here early.
No, and they said, you know, well, other counties have eliminated. It wasn't eliminated, but they didn't have companies.
Yeah.
Or their union, and it's going to it affects 25.
I think we should assign a subcommittee to that.
Because you're asking how far
I think we need a technical expert.
Attorney. There'll be no negotiating anymore.
But still, that doesn't make sense.
Then I got to negotiate anymore. Do you want to hire, we're trying to do it. Do you want to hire an attorney? I'm going to wait to see what they do.
Well, the other thing you might want to do is posting of, thinking about careers. So I'm on the executive assurance talk strategy.
Okay, so that
you can find somebody who's done this one I can have.
Again, this one is a very experience.
My talk about the educational features
and the intersection labor. Negotiation is the right word, but
that was mentioned last meeting. I was able to work with that and post it to under the lead of the director. Yeah, I can speak briefly. That sounds good. Okay. And then as far as budgeting and stuff like that, I did talk to Bert and Craig about that. One of the things that Sean and his first thing would be to decide what they are not, what they are on the budget. Okay? Does that sound okay?
Yep.
Okay.
I don't get what
I think it's pretty good. Is that too much in your life?
Bill always was on the labor side, and he's very good. When I was at Robbins, had historically represented labor unions, and kept one of those crazy. But when they bought my
firm,
they wanted to represent them on the trust. So he spun off Bill and the rest of the labor lawyers. And he has his firm. And if you send me an email, I'll get you his contact information. But he's good and he's very nice. This woman works for Briggs & Morgan, which is a big firm. Represent management.
Well, I think we're ready to convene the meeting.
And you could call her if she'd recommend.
I will call the meeting to order. First item of business is to take a look at the agenda and see if anybody has any additional comments, additions, or questions. If not, I'd take a motion to approve the agenda.
So moved.
We moved. A second?
I'll second.
Moved and second to approve the agenda. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Next item is the approval of minutes from our first meeting. I'd entertain a motion. Those were sent out, I know, in advance.
So moved.
It's been moved to approve the minutes, is that right?
Yeah.
A second?
Second.
Second by Lisa. Any discussion? Hearing none, we vote. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Approved? Introductions. I guess I just thought that we ought to go around the room and, again, if there's any new people here that we've got today that haven't been here before. We've got the entire commission here with the exception of Bob Horton this month. I know Bob had a conflict and wasn't going to be able to join us. And we've also got then some guests. I think we've got Bill Morey, Chris, Vasilis, Jennifer, Kay. And then we've got a couple of folks that weren't with us last month. And we've got Janelle Weiss from Burnett Title, but she's not a stranger to electronic recording, as she has kind of been involved for, in the beginning was the word, and the word was Janelle. Is that what it was? That sort of thing we had.
I think we're stretching.
Anyway, and then we've got, sitting to Janelle's right, the lady that got us all into this mess, right? Pam Trombo, who is an employee of U.S. Recording now, and we all knew her and loved her dearly when she was the consultant that worked for the original task force that created the recommended electronic recording standards for the state of Minnesota. And we're happy to have Pam here with us today as well. And then we have two other guests down in the center field bleachers there.
We're taking in the sun.
All the sunlight?
Jeez.
You're in the green.
Hanglers.
It's the green corner down there, right? Energy conservation folks, Lynette and Larry Deline from McLeod, right? And Anoka County. So.
Can I just mention, Mr. Chair, that there's a sign-up sheet for visitors that are going around. So please, if you can ensure that you sign in, please.
Yep. Anything else regarding introductions? We've got everybody here. All right. Let's get on to the substance then. The topic of commission rules that came out for all of us to have an opportunity to review. And I think there were some suggestions and some comments that did come in. The rules were basically taken from what the previous task force had put in place. And there were a few recommended modifications. I should have brought my marked original copy, but I didn't.
Mr. Chair, if I can just go through the changes.
Why don't we do that?
Okay.
And go ahead.
Okay. Of course, we modified this for the commission then as well, noting how the frequency of the commission meeting and the purpose of the commission and the makeup of the commission and as well. I think, Elaine, you sent, as far as the organizations that had that were appointing the members, we did one correction on that for the section of real property law of Minnesota State Bar Association. Sure. And then Article 3, I think those are pretty well set. I mean, just made those to the specifics of the commission itself. Let's see here. Article 4, those are pretty well set to the commission then to, I mean, what we did from before. One thing I'd like to point out, too, is there was some discussion about keeping the annual report, having that as a continual process to kind of benchmark what work has been done by the commission. We decided to keep that in, unless members of the commission would like otherwise. And then resolutions, we decided that verbal resolutions can be presented oral, preferred in written format, but oral is fine then as well. I think that's the major ones, do you think?
Right. Anybody have any questions, any discussion on the proposed rules?
I did have one question. I might apologize for not sending an email, but on page 5 it just references co-vice chairs.
Oh, sorry.
Yes, co-vice chairs there, and then the page before it talks about meeting attendees are the commission chair and vice chairs.
Okay. Yeah, that's something I overlooked.
I was going to send an
email. No, I appreciate it.
I had that recount and stuff going this week, and I
didn't
get that shut off, so I apologize.
Okay. So that's on page 5 and 6.
Yeah, 5F and then 4, section 9. Page 4,
section
9.
Okay. That's something I overlooked. Sorry. Thanks.
This was a carryover from our previous commission where I think we trusted everybody so much we decided we needed to have co-vice chairs. Was that it?
We had three, yeah. There's a chair and two co-chairs.
I don't have any strong feelings, quite honestly, one way or the other on that. If people would like to have co-vice chairs, that's fine by me. For an 8-member group, I don't know that that's necessary, but we probably should at least address it and deal with the rules the way we want to have it. So, people comfortable in just dropping the co?
Yes.
Yep.
I'd entertain a, well.
How so move?
We want to amend the. What do we need? We probably should make a motion to approve the rules first and then deal with the amendment.
Okay.
So you want to approve the rules first?
I can do that also, yes. I'll make a motion to accept the commission bylaws.
And second?
Second.
And now you want to make
the motion
to amend it?
To amend that article. In Article 3, to refer to only a vice chair as opposed to co-vice chairs.
And a second?
I'll second.
Any discussion? If not, we vote on the amendment.
As far as discussion goes, maybe we want to just combine the two motions, but I think if we approve the bylaws, then technically we have to fall underneath Article 8, or we'd have to have 10 days' notice before we can amend them.
Nice eye.
Can I amend my original motion? How does that work? Mr. Chair.
Gee, you're going to ask Mr. Chair? You know, you can get Mr. Chair into Robert's rules here beyond his level of understanding.
Beyond mine, I know that.
So you'd have to amend her original motion, right, to make the change and...
To make the change and then accept.
Or to accept it with
that change.
Accept it with a change.
Just
okay.
Hit rewind and do it.
Yeah.
We can withdraw. We can withdraw. We can start all over.
There's only eight of us.
Yeah.
And we're all sitting here.
And we're just fixing a typo.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That's the worst part. Just something small.
Let's start again.
Okay, I make a motion to accept the commission bylaws with that typo change.
Of eliminating coal.
Coal.
Second?
Second.
Any further discussion? Ryan, you comfortable?
And I apologize again. I should have emailed it. We wouldn't have this discussion.
I'm glad you caught it.
Yeah,
glad you caught
too.
Because then we would have to wait another month or two before we get a minute. Okay, hearing no further discussion, all those in favor on the amended bylaws, say aye.
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 Opposed? They are carried and passed. Very good. We have, as I mentioned before, our guest Pam Trombo. And Pam, as some of you know from history, had done an original validation effort of county systems to do Model 3 electronic recording. And from our meeting last month, there was an interest to have Pam come and talk a little bit to us about validation, what it means, what was done, and some of the topics that perhaps you may want to address with her for the future of what we might want to consider for electronic recording as a standard for Minnesota. And with that, Pam, take it away.
I think, I don't know if everybody got a handout, but I do have a over here. There should be an
overhead.
Yeah. Pam, you just waited for a quick second. For it to
okay.
And do you want to see?
Bill?
Mike, while we're getting set up there, are
yes.
we going to deal with item 6 on the agenda later? Is that the plan?
For the transition.
Oh, I'm sorry, I skipped right over it.
I can do that now.
Yeah, well,
sure.
I can tell you.
I was going to ask Diane to just kind of cover that for us. Thank you, Bill. I'm sorry, I didn't have my glasses on.
We're still working on the transitional period. We're still waiting for the Office of Secretary of State for the all the electronic documents. There was a mention at the last meeting of the EERC of a PowerPoint presentation that was done where it was educational nature. Benita pointed me to the right people on that one, and I was able to obtain that. So we're starting to collect the information. The website, the skeleton is there, but it's still waiting to be populated on information. So.
Maybe, Diane, we could extend to Benita an invitation to come and join us if we don't have all that populated. She could explain to us how it's going to proceed.
Yeah. I know she's been working on it. There was a few things that came up with the Office of Secretary of State that they had to work on.
You
so.
Mean those elections they were
you know,
trying to deal with
I don't thing? Know. A few things. Sorry, it's taking us a little while to get it set up today.
And I'll apologize in advance if I start coughing. I'm trying to get over this annoying cough that I've had for weeks on end. So today I'm doing pretty good, but I did take a swig of cough syrup. Yeah, I did take a swig of cough syrup in my car.
She had that same cough for 3 years.
What else was in that flask?
Yeah.
Does she have something in the drawer at work, too?
It's orange, you know, orange and vodka. It works out. Can't smell it.
Yeah, I'm going to have to get a little closer.
Is there a little adjustment on the front there?
That's probably pretty good. What do you think? Is that okay?
Yeah,
I need to turn it off and turn it on again.
We can adjust it.
Okay.
Those auditor treasurers do more than count bullets. I can see that now.
Just PowerPoints. 2-hour training on the Secretary of State's office being able to do that.
So Mike called and asked if I could come and give a little talk about schemas, XML validation, mainly validation, why is it necessary. So I spent a bit of time doing these, mainly thinking about it and trying to get it on paper, and then trying to get it on a PowerPoint and so on and so forth. But who doesn't have one of these? Is it everybody in there?
Well, there's some
other copies on them.
And actually, someone can have one because I can look.
I got some extra. We have one
next.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah. Oh, you got the little tiny ones.
Yeah, where they can take notes.
Okay, then I'll take them.
Then you take those.
And if you have any questions, please ask. And moving forward, I just do page down and page up.
Yeah, you can just do
those.
Okay.
Yep.
I just took a little second to.
And I know some of you are from the previous task force, so I'm just going to rehash a few things. I may bore you, but I think it's exciting. In the beginning, I was assigned the task to create a schema for the Minnesota Standards for Level 3 e-recording. And what we did was we started out with the Minnesota Uniform Conveyancing Blank Forms, because the data was already there that needed to be populated, so why not go there as a start and figure out what was needed? We started with all the underlines, because that was the data that submitters had to actually populate, and we decided to go through and figure out what could go in those underlines. Some of them were no-brainers, like a date, month, day, and year. You know, that's pretty easy. But when you get down to a mortgager and a mortgagee, that could be a wide variety of things. A mortgager could be individuals, corporations, trustees, it just extends past a lot of possibilities. So we had to kind of group it, figure out what would be most consistent and would work for a lot of the cases. So I'm going to start with the mortgager, and I'm only going to do the mortgager. We're not going to go through every line in this document. But for a very simple case, we can look at a mortgager and say, a mortgager's name could be John Brown. I know there can be more, but this is, we're doing very high level here. So if we start out with John Brown, somehow we want to represent that in data to send to the county in a file so that the county system can look at it and go, I know that's the mortgager, and I know that's the mortgager's name. So how do we do that? We want to start out with a business rule. And what would our business rule be? We want to say that a mortgager is required on the document. But is it the mortgager is required? Is it the marital status? Is it the first name, middle name, last name? State of Minnesota, we said that it was the mortgager's last name is required. I know one of the reasons was because we have prints. So we have one name. And I know that wasn't the only reason, but we stipulated the last name had to be required when sending a document to the county via Level 3. So how do we identify that? We create an entity called an element. And that element would be the data tag that would represent what that name was. So let's call that element name, because it is. It's a name. And we populate that name with the actual data. So the syntax would be, it starts with name, my data is John Brown, and then that's just the ending of John Brown's name. And if we look at our business rule, that says last name is required, visually, you can say, yeah, Brown is probably the last name. But if you look at it via a system, the system may not know. They may say, well, maybe John Brown is the first two middle names, or first name and middle name. Maybe there's two middle names. Maybe that's just the last name. The system doesn't really know. So we said, okay, well, let's go back to the drawing board, and let's define it a little further. And most county systems do separate first name and last name. So it just made sense that we would do it if we're sending data to the county, that they could use it like that. So we create two new elements called first name and last name. And we would populate the data in these appropriately. So first name would be populated with John. Last name would be populated with Brown. And this worked really nice because now the county could say, oh, here's my last name field. Let's match it up to what's the last name in my database, or populate it as the last name in my database, and same with the first name. We could also validate that to say, is there a value in my last name field? And yes, there is. Now, we can't say, is the value valid? Because we can't account for every name that's out there, but your back-end systems can validate that name to say, yes, this is the name that we have in our system. So what we did, we kind of went through that exercise over and over and over again for every underline in that document. And we had many meetings, we had many discussions, you know, we revamped, redid, but we came out, I think it came out pretty good. The one thing that we had to do after we defined the smaller elements, the first name, the last name, is we had to take those and we had to group them into bigger elements, because somehow the system has to know this is a first name for the mortgager, or this is a first name for your officer, or this is a first name for your mortgagee. So then we had to group the first name and the last name, and we had to identify on an outer element saying that this is the mortgager first name and the mortgager last name. And then we just kept grouping everything, and as we grouped them together, we created this huge file that represented all the underlines in that uniform conveyancing blank form. And that file ended up being the XML that we would send to the county. So everyone who has an e-record system here, that's what your XML is. It's just this huge data file of less than sign, greater than sign, slashes. But in between those is all the data, and the tags are representing what that data is. If you take that XML and you start trying to figure out, okay, how do I get that XML to represent what my pattern is, what my validation would be against that, you have to break it down, and you would remove the data values, because that changes with every document that's submitted. So if you remove the data values, but you keep your element names, because the element names are consistent, and then you add your rules of what's required, whether it's a date, whether it's a character, and you can even add enumerated lists, like for the state of Minnesota, we could add all the counties in Minnesota, and those would be only the valid values for that underline. So what you end up, after you strip it of all the data, you end up with a file called a schema. And the schema is what we actually delivered as a standard for the state of Minnesota. In this schema here, the syntax is a little hard to read, but once you kind of look at it, it makes little sense. The element is referred to as mortgager, and it occurs at least one time. So it's required. A mortgager is required on a document. Your element called first name, it occurs zero times. It can occur many times, but it may or may not be present. But your element called last name has to be there. So you have to have a mortgager, and you have to have a last name for your mortgager. And that is what our schema looks like. Of course, it's huge. That's just a tiny little portion of it. But that is what we developed, what was delivered as a standard, and what county systems use to create their systems and validate what is being sent to them. So I have a few exercises. Example one, if we have a name, a little tiny file called mortgager, and it has first name and the last name, Jimmy and Jones, and the schema is the exact same schema that I showed you before, has an elemental mortgager, a first name and a last name. Would you think that this is valid? Is that Jimmy Jones, if that data that we sent to the county, do you think the county would validate it?
Yes. I'll go out on a limb.
I think so too.
Yeah, it does, because it meets all the requirements. It there is a mortgager. The first name is optional. It can be there. And the last name is required, and it is there. The next one, again, we have the same schema. Would that be valid? Would it pass the system? Yeah, because, again, mortgager is there. First name is optional, so we really don't have to have it, but the last name has to be there. Example three. No, because last name is required, and it would fail on validation. And one more. Do you think that's valid?
No.
No? Mm-hmm. Anybody want to say why?
First name.
Right. It does have a data tag for Jimmy. It says first, but it has to say first name. That's right. And that's another thing that the schema validates, is making sure that your data tags that represent your data are identified correctly. So there's some syntax, you know, spell checks that it goes through also, not just data integrity. So we've just done an exercise in schema validation. That's exactly what the county systems do, of course, on a grander scale. But that's pretty much what they do. They take the schema that was designed and delivered as a standard, they take the data that all the submitters are submitting, and they compare the two and say, does it meet the rules? And if it does, it goes through the system. If it doesn't, it gets kicked back to the submitter, and the submitter has to use it. So, in the real world, performing this test, bless you, performing this test manually, it's not a good use of a person's time, obviously. So what vendors do, vendors like Trimon, Fiddler, and WCI, they're the three that are already certified, they use a validation engine that they designed, they developed, and they use the schema rules to validate what is being submitted to the county. And schema validation, what it does is it says, okay, vendors, you have your validation engine. I'm going to throw tests at you, and I'm going to know what the results of those tests should be, but you're going to tell me what you think they should be, because I want to make sure you're following the rules that the state of Minnesota has set up. So that's what schema validation mainly does. It tests what the vendors have designed using the schema and making sure they're adhering to the rules that were approved. And then if schema validation is passed, if the schema validation is passed, then the submitters can only submit the XML that validation engine approves. Just I left my little flask out in the car. So, way back when we started this whole thing, vendors started creating the validation engines, and certification had to be done. We did get certified. I'm saying we because I was at Hennepin County at the time that was happening. And what happened was test XML files were created. So somebody went out and created all these XML files that submitters would technically submit. They gave them to the vendors. Thank you so much. They gave them to the vendors, and the vendors took those files and they put them against their system, and then they returned what they found as errors back to the group that was certifying it. And then the group looked at those errors and said whether they passed or failed. If they passed, there was a little form that the vendors had assigned saying the validation engine that we use to do run against these XML files is the validation engine that we are using in our production system.
This is only good for three types of documents.
Correct. Yeah, they only tested releases, assignments, and certificates of those. Yeah, you know, only in level three also.
Right.
So if they pass, they pass. They were certified, and then that system could be installed in any county in Minnesota. If they failed, they had to repeat the test until they did pass. There was no, the XML files were mainly submitted via email. It was a big zip file they had. I don't know how many XML files, but the vendors just took these XML files and threw them against their system. There was no system-to-system passing of the XML files, other than email. So, you know, that was back then. We were all starting off. Everyone was kind of figuring out what this was all about. Lessons learned. Now, moving forward, I know there's some vendors that want to be certified. And because we've learned a lot over the X number of years that we have been doing e-recording, there's a lot of things that can go wrong with submitting. Moving forward, things that I would suggest, document and creating the test cases per document type. And I'm not going to say a number per document type, but definitely you have to look at each scenario because we have three separate schemas for each different document type. And you want to create the XML beforehand, and you want to identify what the expected results are beforehand. You want to create a form for the vendor to fill out, identifying the validation engine used. We have no idea what the validation engines are being used. And it's not that we need to know, but it's a good thing to know, because if we do have a vendor that's having problems, or if somebody comes to us and say, hey, what validations are people using, it can be information we provide for them, if that wants to be shared. I don't know, private versus public information. Any changes to the schema? As we were going through this exercise, there were changes made to the schema the vendors had to make. There are known changes, I believe they are documented, but there are also other changes that I'm sure were made just to work with their validation engine that we need to know, because moving forward, if we have to make changes to the schema, all those changes should be incorporated so people using that validation engine don't have to go through the same exercise that everybody else did to try to find out what the problem was. We have to learn. Types of signatures. We allow for four different types of signatures. Two are actually only used right now among all the submitters and vendors. One is a digitized signature, which is like your Best Buy signature, where you sign it and it looks like a signature on the document. The other one is a text signature, where it's mainly just font of the person. And counties do different things. They accept different things and they return different things. When the document is recorded, the signature that the county recorder or the treasurer, as we're moving forward, uses, maybe digitized, digital text. We have to identify what those are, because we have to be able to make sure that the XML adheres to the schema for that type of signature. And require a documented walkthrough of how the vendor is executing the validation test. We want to know how they're doing it. We want to make sure that they... And I'm not saying that they do this, but you kind of want to see it working. You want to make sure that there isn't a person in the back room validating this stuff by hand, which, and like I said, I'm not sure. I'm not seeing people do that. But you just want to make sure that they are doing it, or how they're doing it, too, because you can always learn from how they're doing it. I know some vendors actually set up a little test system where you could put the file into a little box on the screen, and then it would send it through the system. So... require an initial test to go through real time with appropriate results. We want to make sure that you give them the XML, you give them the style sheet, you give them everything they need, and you see it go through their system, and you see what's coming back. And you want to make sure that what's coming back is what you sent them. And then you want to indicate what you expect back from the vendor. The first time around, we did not have to return our XML. All we did was say what the problem was. So counties return XML back to the submitter. They return XML with recorded or rejected information in there, and that recorded and rejected information has to meet the schema standards also. So going in, the XML may be correct, but going out, it may not be because it doesn't hit a validation engine coming back. But you want to make sure that it's right, because for all the submitters going to that county, they're all expecting this one format back, and if it's different, then that causes problems for the submitters. And you want to receive the image of the document that was generated. In the first time through, we never ever saw the image. We only sent the data, but there was no image that was seen. And then the error that was generated. Lots of times when you submit something to a validation engine, it returns an error, but it's not in the rejected portion of the XML. The rejected portion is mainly when the county rejects it. If the validation engine rejects it, it's kind of cryptic coming back. And a lot of vendors kind of make it cleaner coming back. So you want to see that, because you want to make sure when submitters are submitting, what they're receiving back as an error is something that they can understand, because you don't want to be spinning your wheels trying to figure out why is this happening. And then what would be delivered to this group is what was tested for each vendor. The deliverables for each vendor, including the XML and images, so what we sent them and what would have been coming back. The schema changes that the vendor had to make. The software specifics gathered for testing purposes. Again, what validation engine they're using, just in case there's another vendor out there that's having problems, you can refer them to them. And then whether they pass or fail certification. So it's mainly everything that was part of that testing, the inputs and the outputs would come back to this group here. So you had documented proof that was done, and you could reuse it, and look at it, and improve it. And then the things that you need to determine, the question was only those three documents. That's all that was done. I know we're moving forward. Do we want to do more documents or just those three? Is it only level three testing? And what version? Right now we're at the schema standard version 3.0. And I don't believe there's another version out there, because I think any modifications were stopped. So is that the version that's going to be tested? And then what elements are to be tested? Because we're dealing with SATs, certificates of release and assignments, we don't have to send in property. So property was never really tested. Are we going to test that even though the document doesn't use it? Is that something we should be testing now? Or do we wait until mortgages and deeds and everything else come on board to test that? And then again, the signatures, what type of signatures are being tested? And then there's other little quirks that kind of come out through the testing phase. And you have to identify what will not be tested. Any business rules not built into the schema. One of them is your notary stamp. We send a date for the notary. And if that date is expired, that's not built into the schema. The schema says it has to be a date. It has to be a valid date, but it doesn't have to be a date in the future. It's just a valid date. So that is a rule that the county is going to have to implement, but that's not part of the testing phase for the validation, unless it's built into the schema. And then county-specific requirements. Certain counties only accept document numbers within a certain range. We wouldn't be testing, and I say we, just because we're all sitting here, wouldn't be testing that range of document numbers, because that's county-specific. The schema doesn't imply that the document numbers can only be within this range. So those things would not be tested.
Pam, do you mean quantities of documents? Document numbers, those are issue assembly.
Mortgages. If you're sending in a mortgage that's a Torrens, your county only accepts a certain range. That's not built into the schema. So there's things that you have to identify up front. We will not be testing those because that can really explode your testing on that because there's all those little things. Same with something like the officer title. The schema doesn't indicate what the title of the officer is, but as a county, you may not accept certain titles depending on the document. So those things are not built into the schema. They should not be tested via your validation. That's it in a high level nutshell.
Pam, that is the best explanation mm-hmm. I've ever heard at a level that dummies like me can understand. No, really, very seriously.
Yeah. Great job.
Outstanding.
Well, thank you. I thought about it for a while.
That's very well done.
Yeah. Yeah, so, very, very well done.
Well, I hope. If you have any questions, you know, you can even email me later if you just have a little question you want to ask me. But I want you to understand why it's important.
Did you do this for all of the variations on mortgage satisfaction? That
yeah.
Because the uniform conveyancing blanks, of course, have one for business entities and all
yeah.
that stuff.
Yes.
So,
yeah, we
okay.
looked at that, and we reused a lot because
I would think.
Mm-hmm. the certificates of release and assignments and SATs all have kind of the same. But, yeah, we looked at it for corporations, individuals, and we just kept working and plugging in examples all the time. I'd always come and say, give me an example, let's see if it can work. And then, you know, someone would come up with some weird ones. I'd have to go back to the drawing board.
It seemed to me we had about 40-some in our counties that were going through, I mean, LLCs. We used all the different corporations.
Trustees.
To try and identify that naming convention to see how and what would go through on it.
Yeah, and it the most we cannot submit right now is documents that have more than one mortgage reference on them because the schema was designed to only allow for one mortgage.
So if it's satisfying multiples,
yeah, you
can't. Do a single SAT for each mortgage?
Gotcha. It fails on the validation.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the one thing that could be changed.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, that change also causes changes on the county side. So that, as far as I know, that is pretty much the only thing that will not allow us to do a level 3.
If my memory serves too, I think that was actually, we knew about that, but because we thought this was a pilot and it was going to be a short term, we said, oh,
yeah.
We'll get this through and not create all this extra work and then get to that sometime in the future. And who thought it would be 5 years later?
Yep.
Yeah, and I actually misspoke. It was modifications and assignments, any additional reference documents outside of mortgages.
Oh, okay.
Those were also we can't do. But
yep.
Again, you know, for a pilot, it was like, let's stay simple, let's keep it like
mm-hmm.
this, and then we'll
mm-hmm.
expand. But as far as mortgagees and mortgagers, those names, I've never seen anything not go through because of that. So.
Pam, a couple of questions for you in terms of moving forward. As, say, additional documents were added to the system, how important is validating those additional documents to a schema test validation like what you've done for the additional documents? How important is that?
Additional documents as in ones that we've already designed, like the mortgages and
right.
deeds?
Yep.
Very important because those ones are those that we're talking about, mortgages, deeds. And those are different format from what the certs, assignments, and satisfactions are because those... The certs, assignments, and satisfactions all reference documents, whereas the mortgage and the deed, the mortgage is the document being referenced. So it has a totally different format, and there's different information on there. So it's extremely important that you need to certify it to make sure that you're sending the right information to it. You're not sending a mortgage reference document with your mortgage. mortgage, you have to verify that that data is only the data that goes with that document. And same with the deeds. It's a different animal that you're adding into the system.
And do we have that schema set up for mortgages and deeds?
We do. It definitely would have to be looked at now that we've kind of learned with the other documents. But from what I understand, it probably needs minimal changes. I know the CRV would be the one that would need a lot of change, but that's not going to be used anymore.
Right.
So the mortgages and the deeds, I would say, is fairly stable.
And the deeds, you used the uniform conveyancing blanks?
Mm-hmm.
What
yeah.
mortgage did you use? The uniform conveyancing blank mortgage or the Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac?
Mm-hmm. I think we used the Fannie Mae. I can go back in my notes and look. I honestly can't.
Okay.
But that was
okay.
The big issue was
which
there's
one
so well, there's so many variations to mortgages. Because what she's referring to is definitely level 3.
Mm-hmm.
There's a whole different world with level 2 and what needs to be
right.
validated and the flexibility of a level 2 versus a level 3.
And for the mortgages, what we would do again is look at the blank lines because the verbiage changes.
Mm-hmm.
And that the verbiage is style sheets. That's not part of the schema validation. A style sheet is based on what the submitter wants it to look like and how the data is and all the verbiage that's supposed to go in there. The data that gets plugged into those fields is what we designed. And that, I'm assuming, is fairly consistent across the documents. It varies, but you still have the people that are involved. You still have your dates. You still have your amounts. You know, everything is consistent across there. There may be more fields on one form than on another, but the fields are all the same. Your parties and entities and dates are the same.
Too is the additional stuff we've added to the tax and mortgage registration forms
right.
and buildings and those.
Yeah, and that's already in there. It's already built in there, but validating that it is created properly coming back out so that the submitter can see what was taken and who took it. So it's totally different from the other documents because you're going to a different department and you're having different people sign this time around too. You don't have your banks signing the documents now, you have the people.
What about legal descriptions? You know, the SAT doesn't have a legal in it, but is there a field for legal descriptions? Is that
there? Is there's a comment, which is a big block that you can type in the legal. But we also did it so that you can identify your lot, your block, your plat name, your quarter sections. You can take those individual little fields and put them up there, too. So it's a quick hit for the county to say, oh, is this a lot and block or section township?
That's really good.
But the legal description, the actual text, is in the XML also.
The more platted your county happens to be, the more use that could be made of that type of.
I would think meets and bounds would be much more difficult.
Well, you.
But at least if it can tie it to the.
Thing,
you have a meets and bounds tag, literally. It's called meets and bounds. And all the verbiage in between is the description. So.
5 pages worth of.
Yeah.
But then when it shows the section or quarter section or whatever, then does that go to the tract index? I mean, I'm assuming that makes the tract indexing
that's
easier.
That's what it should, yes.
Well, that's what we're hoping it does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
That'd
since
be really
have,
slick.
Since we haven't got to do deeds or
mm-hmm.
mortgages at that level.
Mm-hmm.
At what you're talking for
level 3. Yeah.
Right.
The level 2s already account for that, and
mm-hmm.
we do send that in, and I know the counties are using that data we send in to compare against their system.
Is that on the wrapper then? Is that... Where do you put that on the level 2?
On the level 2, the level 2 is exactly like a level 3. The main difference is the legal description, we would not type it all in. We would just say, this is my lot, my block, my plat, or my quarter section, section, township, range. We would just have that little bit of information in the appropriate fields.
Mm-hmm.
And then signatures aren't sent because you don't need signatures on a level
index data that is set. So your legal legal text does not have to be set because it's in the image of the document.
Pam, if we could expand a little further on a Model 2 approach, Level 2, whatever.
We like Level.
Level. We can level the playing field with 2 here, but how critical and how important is validation for Model 2, Level 2, and how would one go about approaching that as opposed to what was done with the Level 3 that was performed several years ago here?
For Level 2, it's not as extensive testing because you're not validating the end result. You are not creating the document on your side. You're just taking, you're taking the image of the document that's already created, and you're giving the indexing data, the county we usually type, and you're sending it. So the most that you would have to validate on a Level 2 is that all the data fields that are required are being sent in, just like we did with our last name. But you don't have to worry about an image coming back. Is it the image of the style sheet that I sent? You have to make sure it's the image coming back that you sent them. But you don't have to verify that I sent this style sheet with this data and I'm only getting half of it because something went wrong. So you don't have to validate the generation of the document because the document's already generated. So the testing is much smaller. The testing cases are much smaller and not as extensive in detailing the information.
Because the number of elements is so much greatly reduced.
Greatly reduced, the data is very minimal, and the document is already there for you. So you're sending that document. You're just sending just data that refers to that document.
I haven't seen a Model 2 image come back, but it does come back with the stamp and noise.
Yeah, some counties
running it back into the submitter.
Yeah. And some counties, not in Minnesota, but other states, they send a cover page instead. But that's how they do it on a manual document, too. But the Minnesota ones actually have the stamp up on the top of the page.
Pam, in going forward also, how important is and how frequently should systems be validated?
Yeah.
And what's the pros and cons about arguments of that sort of thing?
It would be nice every time they made a change to validate it, but of course everyone tweaks things here and there. Lots of times, if the vendor makes a change to their system, the submitter finds out about it pretty quick. If whatever happened, it's not validating correctly. It would be nice once a year send a few test cases through and say, hey, just see if these work. But it's, I'm sure Bill can speak, changes are made all the time to account for county back-end systems to enhance, make things more efficient. If you're doing a total rewrite of the system, I would definitely say, yeah, they need to go through validation again. But tweaks throughout the year, you can't even get a handle on that. And submitters make that too. We tweak things all the time to try to, you know, it's like, oh, why don't I try this? And so that's a hard one to answer.
Pam, last question for me. How expensive is it to find someone competent that knows and understands this technology that could move forward and do something of that nature? In other words, what would we need as a commission to be able to have that type of expertise to do on an ongoing basis going forward?
That's a catch-22 question. obviously, someone knowledgeable in the schemas, because you don't want to be spending a lot of money having someone come in and learn, you know, spend weeks understanding it and not understanding a lot of the history. And going through and being able to look at it and go, oh, I can create test cases. obviously having someone that understands it, pros and cons, because if they understand it, it's hard to create test cases because you understand it so well. You're like, well, I'll try this, and then you can have someone else that sits there and goes, what about this, what about this? They're the ones that are new, but they can bounce questions off someone who is knowledgeable. Because testing your own work is hard. Everyone knows that. If you have to proofread a document that you read, you don't pick up errors. You have to do it backwards, is what I told you, reading backwards. But, this is just the same thing. Coming up with a lot of the test cases is easy, but coming up with the real ones that, hey, well, what about this? What about that? Those are the hard ones because you're just so close to the subject. But I would think at hand in hand, someone who understands it, but someone who understands what the concept is, yet hasn't been involved 100%, so they're not so close to it that they can actually generate test cases that are really good test cases and valid. And gathering data from the counties. You can go out there and say, you know what? Send me documents that are odd looking. And we create test cases for that. That's the best place to get all your data that you gathered.
So my question would be, is our next step for these companies who want to get validated, what would be the next step for them? Do we have to have that person in place for them to submit their test cases to? Or do they validate and bring us the information that, you know, we have taken this schema, we have made it work at this X number of times with this company or with this county, and say, okay, if it worked in that county?
Well, I was going to add as a kind of a closing commentary on the topic is that Pam and I have been under discussion about the possibility that she contract with Hennepin County to finish doing the validation for the couple of vendors systems that want to sell to the county. And I'm hoping that Pam may have some time this fall with a friend of hers, perhaps, that could engage in this for some of the very reasons that she laid out in terms of her knowledge and their knowledge of, A, our business, B, the schema, and the experience they had from those of us that had systems that were validated with the original go-around. And at least for now, that was what we had talked about. And I'm sure you all now know why I think it's important to have Pam do that, because she can do it probably faster and more efficiently than anybody else, at least to get us up to par for other vendors that do want to come in and market to counties for their recording systems. So,
okay, now, and then that would lead me to my next question. Do we want to put out there that we're doing a validation, that the commission has authorized validations of new companies from September to November or December, so that, I mean, there's companies that may want to come to Minnesota
and get validated,
even though they've not sold any systems here,
right?
If they think in the next year they want to come sell systems, is that part of our job as the commission, or part of our duties of the commission? Is to set up the procedures. So our procedure would be from September to January, and, you know, we will be open for validations for new companies in the state of Minnesota, and not have to have that validation process in place continually, you know, that we can do it in that once a year we will do that. You know, once a year we will take validations of new people between September. I mean, I'm just throwing those dates out, you know, September to November. I mean, I don't know how long we want to keep it open, but if we would set up that kind of policy, then other vendors out there will say, well, you know, well, we missed it this year, but now we've heard they're going to do it again next year at this time. Does that leave us where we're not doing it individually all the time? Or is that make it easier, or does it make it more complicated to do it that way? That part I don't know. Is it easier to...
I would say if you have all your test cases in place, it doesn't really matter, because you're really dealing with only one vendor at a time, and okay. It's mainly up to the vendor. If you have everything in place, you're waiting for the vendor to get things up and running for you to test with them. The big thing you got to ask is, this is a level 3 testing. If a vendor wants to come in with level 2, can they just come?
That has been the case in Minnesota up until now, yes. There has been no validation of Model 2 for vendor systems done by the commission. The expectation was that individual county recorders have to validate based on site validation in terms of what they've historically done with the paper documents. Mm-hmm. And that's part of the reason I asked that question. Janine, let me just suggest, I think you're really giving us a nice segue into the next item on the agenda,
okay.
Which is really work plan, which I think we need to spend a little time on. But I think to answer what Pam's addressed, if we had all the money in the world, I think an idea of setting up a plan for a routine review as we've got standards developed would be ideal. But right now, the most money I've got to spend on doing those that have already wanted to market is $12,000. And I don't think putting out that type of a invitation around the country at this point, we're in a position to be able to deliver on it until we do a work plan and maybe identify resources, where they could come from, how we want to proceed, and which items we put the highest priority on.
And I guess that kind of was my next question, was, is it less expensive to do it like that, where you could contract someone for a short amount of time, or whether we need to have someone available for the whole year? That's where my question was coming
yep.
from, is that going to make it less expensive or more expensive? That led me to my next question, can the company that, and maybe we can get some advice from outside the table here, is it going to be something that someone's willing to pay a validation fee to work within the state? Is that done anywhere else? Is there validation standards in other states?
For us, I mean, and probably a point of clarification, too, so everyone understands, and Pam works with U.S. Recordings, we're just submitters. We don't build any county
right.
system,
right.
So there's no... crossover of that. We never sell the vendor systems or don't compete against that group at all. So Pam isn't writing something that could possibly kick somebody else out to the benefit of U.S. Recordings. So just to clarify that. So then, and my to answer your question is, we don't go to counties to pay a certification. We send and they validate. But
That's why I said around the table might be a better place to get that answer. Is, do you have to be validated in other states? Did you have to pay a?
We've not so far. We certainly have a market in every state, but I don't know. In fact, I asked that question because I figured it would come up today, and have not heard back whether there are any states that are doing validation. But the ones we've approached have not. I would also, Janine mentioned that regarding your question on timing, there aren't hundreds or thousands of companies doing this.
Right.
If there's a dozen, I'd be surprised. So I don't think you have to open it up for a window necessarily, unless it's for another reason, to contain volume or something like that. There just aren't that many vendors that are doing that. I don't think that volume shouldn't be a consideration.
And I guess I knew that. I was just more concerned about having someone available
sure.
to be the
tester
mm-hmm. and what that would cost, for. And if we could share that all at one time, whether that would be cheaper
sure.
than having someone in March get tested, someone in you know, June get tested and then have someone come along in November and want tested. So that was the only reason why I asked that question. Or retested. I mean, Trimin, Fiddler, they're going to continue to create new products, that's no doubt. And if we feel they need to be revalidated, then that same person would have to do that. Or they'd have to go through that same type of process, correct?
Well, that's what the board decides.
Yeah, if we decide that. Yeah. But I meant we would have maybe then a time of year that the people who are changing their product would know that a revalidation period was. And that was just my thoughts. Mm-hmm. So I was looking at the cheapest price.
Well, you know, I was just thinking about this. We're talking about, let's say somebody shows up with something to be validated. You're saying Hennepin County would pay Pam to validate it?
This is a carryover, if you might remember, from the previous task force, where there was some money made available to counties, and Hennepin agreed that we would take that money and use for entering into an agreement to try and spend that money. I've gotten a few extra dollars besides what the state gave us to include in a contract, that we would try and validate at any of the systems that had made queries to the Secretary of State's office.
It's the back-end system.
It's the back-end system.
My question is, why don't we charge the person who wants to be validated?
That was the question I just kind of asked.
If Bill had
to pay it in any state. You know what I meant. That was a procedure.
Yeah.
And he's saying he's not had to be validated in other states. And part of that comes from the fact that we started out with level 3.
Right. Yeah. Right.
And a lot of states don't do level 3. And so the validation was really important if you were doing level 3.
Right.
Because you didn't get to see the document. You only got to see what was created in your office.
I'm just thinking about when you borrow money from a bank, the borrower pays the lender's legal fees. You know, that's just a cost of if you want the loan, that's what you pay. And I don't know. I mean,
yeah.
Again, as somebody not acquainted with this, that's just sort of the...
And then that is just a turnaround system, because if the vendor has to pay that validation, the purchaser of that product would just pay more.
Right.
So
yeah,
then it turns back around to being, you know, the county county government cost. And it's just built in.
I remember correctly, and help me here if I'm misstating something, wasn't there a fee assessed for retesting, revalidating counties if they didn't pass the first go-around? The county had to pay something for revalidation?
Not the county. The vendor.
Or was it the vendor?
The vendor.
It wouldn't be the county.
Okay.
Seemed
to me, and I don't remember anybody saying that, but I think that
I think they just kept trying until they won.
I'm remembering there was that discussion
I think
about
there
that
was.
Particular item, and I may have the wrong topic.
But
we have to
remember that was during the pilot project.
Right.
And most of the pilot project is gone. I mean, I don't know how much of that carries over into now, except that we did accept the schema and the validation as part of the standards in Minnesota by statute. So I don't know how much of those other procedure things carried along.
Bill?
I
know that when we did it for little over 4 years ago now, there were no other validations that had been done in the United States. I know as of a couple of years ago, PREA did not know of any other validation that had gone on. And my speculation is, just knowing the PREA standard, it would be very difficult to validate anything there because it's hard to validate their standard without modifying it to meet Minnesota's specific statutory need issues. So,
but who knows? There may be some out there. And we
but there may be, because I haven't asked anybody, and it's been over 2 years since I've had any discussions. So. And we got a board member there at PREA, too, that could work with you. I'm sure she'd be happy to go hand in glove with you, Bill, to get that help from PREA to find the answer to that.
I had a B part of my question, if I may, Mike, and that is that maybe this is more Eileen's question or something. But is there, in your thinking, any kind of risk in creating a validation in terms of if it's not the same as certification? We got to be careful with words. I understand that, but does this commission incurring potential liability if it has a process for validation and then subsequently something gets through that shouldn't have and causes a problem? Is that an issue to concern ourselves with?
Well, there is, you know, there's sovereign immunity. There's governmental immunity that generally protects government from liability for innocent slip-ups. I mean, this is sort of the general answer. I'm trying to remember, too, in the chapter 386, are there limits about the liability of a recorder who messes up?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe what we should do if we're worried about that is ask to amend our part of the statute to limit any liability, to make it explicit that if something like what Bill is describing happens, that our liability is capped at, I think it's pretty small, isn't it, in 386? A couple $100?
Something like that. I think it's more than that.
Is it more?
Yeah, I think it's a little more than that. But,
I don't even know if it's necessary.
And then there's something about, you know, governmental officials are only liable for so much, too. They're only sued for so much. Yeah.
Right. And it's usually, I mean, most of the time you think about it in terms of tort claims rather than this sort of thing.
And it has to be malicious.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, you have to be, you know, you haven't done your due diligence. You know, you haven't, you're not, you don't want to limit government to set up and set good policy. You know, and that's part of the reason for the laws are if you go out and you're trying to do good works and you miss something, you don't want to discourage people from trying to do good works.
Yeah, because otherwise there'd be no electronic recording.
Right.
We were going to get hung out on that. And to me, it's no different with the electronic stuff than it is with mistaken indexing, and that's gone on for a long time. And I think sovereign immunity protects against that.
There ain't mistakes in indexing.
Well, in other jurisdictions. Not in Minnesota, in other states.
Can I ask one question from the board here? Talking about the validation process, I could see a concern where the original task force had with somebody coming back and keep trying and trying and trying until they do get validated and wasting a lot of time. And I do think you need some protection in that arena with that validation process. I could see certain members
chewing up lots of time.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Until they get it right.
Yeah. That's interesting. Maybe we give them X number of hours. I mean, assuming we're going to absorb that cost, we say we do up to X number of hours, and if it takes any longer than that, we bill you at an hourly rate. That would be one way to handle it, I think.
Or the second, you know, if you have a first try and if you fail, and you want to bring it back to try again, you will fail.
Okay.
Well, I will keep you appraised as to our discussions about the validation agreement, assuming we can get one put together yet before the end of the year, and where we go forth on that. And I think the validation issue, we have not heard the last of it in terms of discussions, but I think there's been a lot of good topics covered, and we can get some more input from some of the folks about what our colleagues around the country are doing on this front. So with that, let me ask if we could go to item number 9 on the agenda because I know a good friend of ours, Janelle Wise, has to leave shortly, and I'd like to cover the trusted submitter topic, if we could, before she ends up having to leave us. I put this item on the agenda because we've had the industry group that really rallied around under the last task force to come up with guidelines, manuals, the how-to cookbook sort of thing, and create some enthusiasm among the submitting community to do electronic recording. And Janelle was one of those that was very active on that. And I talked to her about her willingness to continue to be involved with it, and would she still be willing to have that same kind of fire, B, and she said yes. And then she directed me to someone on the task force that she thought really had the best fire in the belly to probably be the leader on that, that could really get and generate the interest in the title industry group and others. And I graciously did talk to Jeff Carlson, one of our colleagues, if he'd be willing to chair that kind of a committee, and if Janelle would be willing to continue working on that committee, which she said yes. And Jeff, after some strong-arming he's accused me of here, did say he was more than willing to do that. I think we need, as a group, to make certain that we make clear to those that do this work, we're very interested in partnering with you and continuing to move this forward together. And this is why I think it's critical that this becomes basically the first committee task force group that we establish here so that the submitter group knows how critical they are to this and that we move it forward. So that's kind of what I wanted to talk about. Janelle, maybe you want to give a little bit of overview again of where things ended up with the last commission and some of the work products that are there that we've tried to carry over that, you know, Diane and the LCC group have out on the website that maybe we will build on for the future.
From the standpoint of work products, probably the things that were developed the most were a couple of educational pieces, PowerPoints that were taken out to a variety of different groups. We worked through the industry associations, we worked through some of the local or statewide prep groups, and just tried to do exactly that, go out to various different industry groups to promote, to try to encourage, and just to kind of try to generate some energy around this topic and let people know that it was here and viable. And unfortunately, from the county standpoint, unless they have people submitting documents, it's not going to go anywhere. And that's where we are. So that's the story that we have to continue to get out. And I think there's education pieces in there. Obviously, they're always ongoing because as things change, those change, and we need to continue with that. We had hoped, to be honest with you, to be a little bit further along at this point from the standpoint of doing some public-private testing of additional documents, and that's really been contingent upon the ECRB, and that has been delayed once again. So that's really a stumbling block that everybody is trying to overcome, but that's probably going to put things back more toward the end of the year. But that's no reason in my mind not to continue to promote and try to get the industry excited about this.
Good. Thank you, Janelle.
Could I just ask, what happened to that old issue about the industry may not be willing to do much until we can do the full six-pack? Is that still an issue?
That's still very much an issue, but the ECRB really, is what's holding that up, because as Pam said, we can probably do deeds and mortgages, but we can't do them.
Do them at level two? Yeah, okay. And then you would have the six-pack if you had that. And what's the problem with the ECRB? Is it lack of money or?
It's lack of money and lack of staff. They did lose one of their developers. And so that certainly set it back. And, yes, funding was certainly an issue, too.
They had been pilot testing it in Dakota County.
That's what I thought, yeah.
And they've lost their developer. And it's kind of on the – it's still taking place. But they need some more resources. We were supposed to have Hennepin was going to be a pilot tester as well, and we were supposed to have started testing back this past summer originally, and now they've told us that we're passed down to the beginning of next year at the earliest, and that's a little disappointing. I do know that there were some people from our county that were going to meet with the Commissioner of Revenue to talk about it, and I did share with our people that there have been dollars put into this project from both counties and from the industry, and we're all getting asked questions about return on investment, and there doesn't seem to be any yet, and that's getting to be a big issue. I know, Janelle, we talked about that, and that message was going to get brought to the commissioner's office about the critical nature of it, how important it was. So we'll see where that meeting, I think, was taking place today. So,
is that something like, I know Ryan is from the, that's something MAKL can push harder? Is it something the auditor treasurers can push harder? Is there
probably both. Probably we as a commission maybe need to do something to weigh in on that with revenue, and maybe MAKL can take some steps through the board, because that is an item that, from what I've heard from industry people, once there's an electronic certificate of real estate value, within a year, we'll probably see 80 to 90% of all CRVs coming in electronic form, even if they don't mandate that it has to be electronic, because the industry's ready for it. Mm-hmm. It's just revenue that's not.
Well, and I mean, if we've put the financing out there for them, then you're right. The county should be demanding some return on their dollars, and the people. It's just that maybe the counties have a little bit of stronger hold at this point to demand, because it is part of our recording process is to have that. So,
but the counties have made rather significant investment in
right,
this also.
That's what I meant.
And that's the point we all have, and I think that's time for accountability here.
And so maybe that's something we can work on between MAKL and...
MAKL do something on that front?
Probably could. I don't know if we want to leave the assessors out of this either.
Right, that's what I meant.
Their user group as well.
User group, too. But I get from the county level.
The assessor group that was meeting with revenue today. So at least my assessor group.
Mm-hmm. You know, AMC should, too.
Yes.
That's another question.
Yep.
And maybe that's, you know, maybe MAKL's contact is AMC and
assessors,
you know, to...
Well, you know, there might be an opportunity there for a little partnering with AMC, with MAKL together, which hasn't always been hand in glove together, but I think this is an issue that they are going in lockstep together. That might be a smart...
Well, we should be.
Smart move,
yeah, I mean,
for both.
Should be going. We should both want it.
Right.
You know, the commissioners for accountability of the funds we've already
Well, if you had the
spend.
Assessors Association, the Commissioners Association, and the Auditor, Treasurer, Recorders Association all going to revenue and commenting about how important it is, and, you know, MLTA can come back with the money they put in for a follow-up on this and wanting to have, you know, an update and, you know, where it's all at and that sort of thing. I think this is the time to push it. I'm concerned because Jason Parker, who has been the lead person over there, they're going to lose him too if they don't come up with some resources, and that would be a huge blow to all the good work that's gone on up to this point in getting this thing to move forward. And this needs to get institutionalized in revenue so that it becomes the future rather than our wish list.
Think of the savings they must going to have once they get it implemented.
Well,
you know, that's what they have to look at.
I don't know if private sector could help, but I could probably get a resolution from the real property section, and maybe the mortgage, I don't know if the mortgage bankers would back that,
it's
too.
It's not anything that's involved in my mortgage.
Oh, okay.
No, so. This is the deed.
Yeah. Okay.
But it is holding up the entire panel.
That's what I was thinking, if you need that.
Slowing up the process.
But it's not.
I don't think you're going to get much from mortgage, anything from mortgage right
no.
now, to tell you the truth. You're trying to see who survives
yeah.
the mortgage right now.
We're just trying to keep them solvent, right?
Yes. Yeah. Nice the paper to write it on, right?
First things first.
Well, I know it's a frustration in law firms that they still have to have typewriters around to fill these things out. And so I think if I took that to the Real Property Council, if it gets to a point where you'd want private sector, I think we could do it.
So, Mike, can I just ask a quick question then? So that subcommittee is going to be formed for the
Well, I was going to ask for a motion to create that subcommittee, if anyone was interested in making said motion. Ryan?
I'll make the motion.
Is there a second to create a trusted submitter subcommittee with Jeff Carlson as the chair? I assume that's what your motion was, Ryan?
Yes.
I'll second that.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded. Any discussion about the creation of a trusted submitter subcommittee?
Can I ask on the as far as the members? Then Janelle would be.
Well, those would be the two, and I would ask them to come back and let us know who they would recommend to have added to the committee for the next month's meeting.
In your file, there's a printout of what was on the Office of Secretary of State's website as far as the past or the current members as of December 2007, it looks like.
Hearing no further discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Congratulations, Mr. Carlson.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Janelle. Appreciate it. Okay, why don't we go back to item number 8, discussion of work plan. This kind of gets down to the nuts and bolts here, what we need to do, and I'm probably going to tie a little bit together here with item number 11, because I think the legislative budget process consideration comes into play here. I spent a little time talking with Diane and the LCC staff about what do we do in terms of budget process, and what do we do in terms of what we're charged to carry forth here. And Greg Hubinger, and I know Diane and Greg have had discussions with Bert Black, their suggestions to us have been, we think you need to identify your work plan of what it is you think you should be doing, and then come up with what it, you might think it would cost to do said activity. And you probably need to do so quickly, so that we can sit down together with the powers that be about what would it take from a budgetary standpoint to accomplish those activities. Realizing at the same time, as I'm told, that fiscal issues are going to be very tight. One other suggestion that was given, that perhaps we as a commission should approach the authors of the legislation that created this commission and see what, if anything, they had in mind in terms of funding for it. I'm not sure they did, but I didn't think that was a bad idea, at least as a place to start, to have that type of conversation. The difficulty, of course, gets to be it is a difficult time season in the next 50 days to do so, because there is such other items on most of those people's mind right now. And that may be a little bit more difficult to do. But those were pretty much the suggestions that we got from our previous mentors over at SOS and from Diane and Greg Hubinger and staff at the LCC. They've indicated at LCC they're more than willing to work with us on helping put that plan together and to, you know, discuss strategy of where and how to move forward and schedule and that type of thing. So that's kind of what I had, and I thought I'd ask Diane if she had some things beyond what I've shared that she can embellish on that a little bit too.
I just have a couple more things. I mean, with conversations with Bert, he was suggesting, though, if we want to move forward on legislation, looking at appropriations, either considering appropriations for the workings of the group or a fee assessment that would come to the counties. You know, there's two different avenues to consider. That if whatever the group decides that they approach the chair of the state government budget division, which is Senator Wetzel. I think so. But that to approach him early on, that he doesn't like surprises usually, is what I've been hearing.
We certainly learned that, didn't we, last year?
So that's the only thing I had to add is that.
What were the two items he suggested?
Or fee or appropriations. If it's appropriations, it would come through. Much like the Office of Secretary of State had about 2 years ago, they had appropriations that were funding for the workings of the task force at that time. It would be similar vehicle. It would go through the LCC then as the administrative arm of the commission. And those funds would be targeted to the commission then for the workings. The fee would be, you know, a different type of avenue then, too. So.
The industry group wants to lead the charge on the fee. Is that what I heard? Interested in pursuing that?
My guess is after the last time around and the amount that was left in the coffers, I would guess that people would be fairly sour on the idea of another fee, seeing how what was the amount that was that we had in the funds? 1.3 million? 1.8 million?
It's about a million and a half.
That
I think got gobbled up and
would have lasted this commission and funding for this task force and for the rest of its life, and you know, been able to finish off any duties that we would have needed, and then to have that fee paid and then have it disappear as it did, as quickly as it did, I would guess that would be less than palatable for the group that, and also I'm one of them, I was very sour on that idea. I would say I'd go back and ask the people who were there at that time and said, we did have 1.8 million at one time that the state took without much, you know, say on our part, and then and now we're sitting here with nothing. So we're not asking for 1.8 million, clearly, but we are asking for something. So I'm pretty certain that the industry would be fairly sour on that idea, rightfully so.
A fee that was dedicated for a purpose that was taken to balance a budget? I think I can hear an advocate over here that wants to help talk to some legislators about the concern about that sort of activity.
Yeah. I'm just saying, it's moved a little quickly and without much say one way or another.
Well, like the day we died, they took it. I mean, we weren't even warm yet or cool yet.
Yeah, well, the same governor's in office, so. Can you persuade him, Jeff?
Well, I'm just saying that. I don't know that as far as budgeting, we'd have to, clearly the first place to start is work plan. Say, how much do we think we're going to need? And how much for testing and various other things do we need? And then beyond that, you know, we probably don't need a great deal of money going forward.
Can I just add one more thing, Mike? I just recalled from my conversations, I think, with Greg, he was suggesting, even though this is the deadline, there's usually a deadline with new type of legislation of December 1st for this type of financial occurrence. But since this commission is ongoing or not created, it's kind of not really applicable, but he said, that being so, should think about December 1st being a deadline that you should keep in mind.
Okay.
And even if we can only get a holding spot in there by having them renew what we had before. Well, the Secretary of State got $25,000
2 years ago,
per year to when the other commission or the other task force was in place. You know, even if we just go back as a placeholder with that amount of money, you know, it might be more acceptable because we're not asking for an increase that, that they haven't been giving. I mean, as far as rather than going in and saying, well, we're going to need $200,000, you know. But you're right, the work plan has to come first. We have to look at that and look at, okay, if we can get this amount of funding, this is how fast the work plan can go. Mm-hmm. If we can't, then these are the things we can do this year and these are the things we can do next year. I mean, that one kind of leans on the other, but at least if we have to have something by December 1st, if we can get a placeholder in there and get something, then if we have to go back in and increase it because it's not anywhere near enough, then we can maybe, we should be able to justify that then, that change.
Mm-hmm. And those expenses you're talking about are for things like validating, right? Maybe expertise that we would need occasionally to review documents, that type of thing, or technology, or that's what you had in mind?
That's what I had in mind. I mean, if one were to go to full level three,
mm-hmm.
there would be schemas that would need to be created probably for the entire cadre of uniform conveyancing blanks.
Mm-hmm.
And there could be, you know, some significant time, money, and expense to get into that. But based on where I see the industry at right now, I don't think that's needed nor realistic in the next 2 years, 2 year biennium at least. Not at least for this group to get started with where I think we're going to end up being based on just the market forces and kind of where mortgage lending is at and the housing industry is at. There isn't going to be as much interest as there might have been a few years ago. But that's where I would see probably the biggest amount of money in the future, Jeff, in a work plan if you were to get to that. I think what we need to consider is what will it take to continue to promote and move forward model or level two. And what will be necessary in order for that to continue to move forward, at least for the next 2 year biennium. I think that's basically where we're going to be looking at. There are all sorts of ideas that I've got, but you know that really gets to that next level of Model 3.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think until we can get a standard from the mortgage lending industry that we need to spend a lot more time on that, because it's pretty clear in the industry to me that until the industry can do a total package one way, they're not going to basically do much electronic recording. And even at Model 2, there is an advantage to the counties in doing so, and there is additional, you know, site verification, if you want to call it, to make sure that the image is the same as the electronic data that gets submitted. There can be mistakes on that, but, you know, we'll just have to deal with that on the county side, and we deal with those things all the time. There is an advantage of having an image that's already scanned that can go into the system. And there is a huge advantage if we can begin to integrate deeds, mortgages, and the whole rest of the complex together so that we finally bring our auditor, treasurer, colleagues into the future, which is now, with electronic recording of real estate documents so that they can update their auditors' tax records and we can update our indexing records. So I think that's critical that we find a way to make that happen, and I don't see that happening right now on the Model 3 level, at least for the next couple-year period.
We're going to have to push more recording to be able to get the auditor, treasurer's, vendors to want to create the back end room for them, that so when those documents come in, it can check and cross check things automatically for them. And at this point, you know, their back end rooms are still manual, and so we have to get enough recordings coming across our desks to be able to drive their vendors to automate their back rooms.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Their tax packages have to want to do more things than they do to be able to have it be beneficial to you for electronic recording. And so our drive would be you know, but I'm not sure that falls in the role, you know, other than partnering with the submitters, the role of the commission to go out or to be out there trying to sell. To sell e-recording, you know, under the, our description of the commission is to maintain the standards,
mm-hmm.
you know, and so if that's what we do, it's just that I would like enough volume to be able to drive private industry, you know, that's what I want. So,
mortgage banking industry would like more volume too.
Someone would just like to be in business.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let me ask this. We're getting close to our time deadline. I think we need to have a working group that can deal with a work plan and have something that we can bring back to this group next month, because we're talking about a pretty short timeline mm-hmm. here before we've got to have something. We're into, you know, it's September. And our next meeting, isn't it the last week in October, is it, Diane?
Oh, gosh. I'll tell you in a second.
I'm better than Diane.
October 23rd? In my calendar,
okay.
That's
what 23rd?
It says.
Okay.
The 23rd.
That's the
because it's
October
the 4th.
Was the fourth month, or fourth
yeah.
Thursday, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
That is.
Because yeah.
the first Thursday is the second.
Right.
So.
Okay. So we've really got two meetings before the 1st of December. So let me just ask, commission members, who's interested in working on the work plan?
Are you heading this up?
I will head it up.
I'll work with you.
All right. Anybody else? Everybody's jumping on it. Okay.
Well, I can help if, you know, if some of those are email and
conference calls.
Conference
we can
calls.
Get you. Yeah.
kind of hard
sure.
for me to
sure.
make that many trips
no.
in for.
And that might be
only
well,
an hour.
How
so.
We work anyways? Conference
yep.
calls.
Yep. We can certainly do it from my office. Or
mm-hmm.
And Ryan, maybe to be able to start looking at how it affects your office and what standards you'd like in place for that back end or that. Thing. Maybe that's part of the work plan too. I don't know.
That's where I kind of I'd like to. Well, I guess I don't see the complication in the fact that I've been on this committee now for my second meeting to be able to jump in and start to create a work plan.
Yeah, but we need to know what it is that you
mm-hmm.
need to have it do.
Right.
And that's hard
mm-hmm.
for us to do because we don't have yet.
Right.
Your duties.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah, but I'm certainly I'm more than willing to. I'm trying to give as much input as I can.
All right.
I think we might be able to draw on another member that's in the audience that's been a member that I know does have a considerable amount of auditor experience in terms of who's on the tax roll when those deeds come in. The bearded wonder back there in the sunshine corner.
So you're looking for more victims for your subcommittee? Sure.
Yeah. Yeah, because I think, you know, you have some expertise, Larry, that, you know, Ryan's telling me that, you know, he's feeling a little green yet at this point in terms of that. Well, you've got the experience from both sides that could also add and help in that regard. And deal with that, and I think that would be important too. But I don't want to exclude you, Ryan, because it's important because the future is what's going on here. And that's where you're going to be because we can share all sorts of things that I can tell you, like in Hennepin, as documents come in the future, whether it's electronic or paper, we're going to have one place that names get entered, and they're going to go into indexes and land records, and they're going to go into auditors' tax records.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not going to have two people entering that type of information anymore, whether it's done electronically or not.
Right.
Now, Mr. DeLean can tell you what they did 15 years ago when he led the parade before we all started thinking about this. But that's really where the world is headed, and that's what electronic
recording is going to bring about in terms of a real revolution in terms of government offices and how we populate those systems. So that's why we're all going to be playing in the same sandbox, and it's just making sure that we get the castles that we all need to come out of that sandbox together. So, anyway.
Don't go into the sandbox.
Right.
We'll only play nice in the sandbox.
Yep. Well, we will schedule a meeting, and we'll notify all the other board members so you'll at least know when we're going to meet. And we'll come up with at least some type of concept ideas to bring back here for next month's meeting, if that's comfortable with everybody. Diane, if we wanted to do something like that in your offices somewhere, do you have a conference call that...
Yeah, we could
do... Let's say Jeff and I were to come there, could we...
Yeah, or you could even stay at your office, too. I mean, if you'd rather just do it all over the phone.
I've got conference call numbers, too.
Yeah.
So it's not
okay,
big
okay.
Uh-huh.
Okay. All right.
Otherwise, I'm sure that Ryan and I would be glad to meet you halfway somewhere.
We certainly have office space now.
Okay. I could do with my college age son is we Skype each other. You can actually see the picture and
webcam.
It works pretty good.
Yeah.
It works pretty well.
Gee, what's halfway between you and Ryan? Wilmer?
Uh-huh.
Is it?
Probably. You guys can come out to Wilmer. Yeah. It's one little road trip in the fall. It's nice colors out there.
Anyway. All right, thank you on that. Let's keep going here. We've got the hosting of electronic, hosting of recording of county electronic recording activity. Diane,
yeah.
You want to comment on that?
Sure. Mike and I talked a little bit about the hosting of the recording of the counties of electronic activity. And Office of Secretary of State currently has a program that they utilize. Unfortunately, Benita was out last week, and I was out most of this week, and so we didn't really connect yet to see what they utilize. So I can't tell you yet if we'll be able to host that or not.
Mm-hmm. Chris?
Yesterday, I'm the chair of the NACO website committee, and this came up in our discussion,
okay. Mm-hmm.
And we are looking at, if you'd like, through NACO, you could collect data on what's recorded electronically and what's recorded in paper, the abstract and torrent. But we're not going to be as specific as what the SOS has on there right now as to certificates of release, that. So we're not quite sure. We can do the one, but we're not quite sure what you want to do with the other.
Whether
it really has any relevance. Because
right.
Really what we're trying to find out is how many documents are getting
right.
recorded
right.
electronically.
Right.
And so
right.
That's really the key.
Right.
So the rest of it was, I think, because that's what we were doing at the time, and so it had some relevance, but now it's really how many documents are getting recorded.
How about model... two versus three.
Oh, yes, we have
both
that.
Models.
Okay,
both
so you
both
say
models.
So many
separate.
Came in two, so many three
yeah.
Yeah.
in paper.
Yeah.
I would think that would
yeah,
be
I would think
and
that would
and
be
I think
important.
That would be great. I think before the statistics they captured were because we were in a pilot project, we wanted to prove where each county was
mm-hmm.
and what they were doing, but I think, you know, getting those three things covered.
So they are working on that through the MAGA website committee right now as we speak.
Oh, okay.
Setting it up.
Let me ask a question, and I'm just thinking out loud here. I don't care whether it's assignment sats or certificates of release. I do care more about whether it's a deed or it's a mortgage, because the deed drives the ownership rights, and the mortgage drives the real financing issue, which leads to why we basically record in the first place. in many respects, it's the mortgage that drives the recording system. Is that important to have those two document types in terms of numbers? I guess that's...
I don't know that I can see the importance of that, Mike, other than I mean, we each in our own offices probably have the ability to determine how many deeds were recorded or mortgages were recorded for that knowledge. And does that matter to us whether they were paper or electronic? I don't think it does. I think the fact that we know whether it's electronic or paper and at what level is important to know what benefits we're reaping from the money we're spending and how we relate to the use of the volume of other counties. I mean, am I getting as much out of Lyon County as, for instance, Kay is getting, and how come I'm not? I mean, that's where I would probably look at those numbers and say, I know Hennepin County is going to do a lot more, but at what percent are they doing? And what percent of my documents are we even? You know, that's how I think we would use those numbers to go to our commissioners and, you know, either get better electronic equipment or push for a different vendor or, you know, otherwise I don't know what good those stats really are other than for us to use to maneuver our
markers. You can use it for markers. Here's where we're at this point. Here's where it went to this point. You know, you can see the progression.
Here's why I think those two documents are more significant than any of the others. Those two documents drive both offices in the county, the auditor, treasurer, and recorder's offices. The others, they're just recordings. I don't care. Once you do the integration, and that's really what electronic recording is forcing to have
happen. That's what we're trying to force, yeah.
At government level, is the integration of those functions in county circles. And it's those two documents that are the two documents that are used in both offices. And how do we find a way to process engineer in our back-end offices to make that happen? And that, to me, is what I know I'm going to get evaluated on in my county by my board and my boss. That's critical. And if it's not to anybody else, that's fine. But I do think that's what legislators are going to have an issue and concern about, because that is the process improvement that we're going to see a huge potential leap in when we can integrate some of those activities and functions together.
Do we need then to separate them out, or can we just have
total number of electronic recordings, number of deeds, number of mortgages?
Larry, you had some thoughts?
Well, those particular functions need to be integrated, whether it's paper or electronic.
You're absolutely right.
So I really don't think that I think you need to be telling your board that you've integrated those functions, not to start keeping statistics on which ones got recorded electronically or on paper, because if you're still doing the paper ones not integrated and only integrating the electronic ones, you still haven't gotten there yet.
Yep, you're right.
He is more advanced than we are, isn't he?
That's a separate issue. He is, that's right.
So I can leave it as is, what we
want to
do.
Yeah, I guess I'm fine with that.
I would make a motion that the commission accept MAKO's offer to keep those stats on their website.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded for MAKO to collect monthly data on recording activity, electronic, level one, level two, and level three. I'll get it yet. You're just
going to do level one.
I'm not
going to do level one. I am still alive.
I'm a recovering model man here. I'm sorry.
Is there any
discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Now, MAKO is going to host that on their website, or is MAKO then going to also forward them to Diane so that she can put them on the LCC site, or are we just going to link from LCC to MAKO?
I would think a link would be the best.
We don't need to duplicate it. If you can link that, I think we'd take care of it.
We don't have it yet, but I was promised it's not that difficult. It should be done quite quickly. It's not our action. I will send out, my idea was to send out emails to those who are participating in electronic recording.
Start. Keep collecting.
Keep collecting. Yes, Larry?
I would like still think we need to have some idea of volumes statewide for potential funding issues on down the road, so we know how many documents we're recording statewide.
Well, you know, we've got a few little bugs to work out with it, but it should, as promised, it shouldn't be that difficult.
And it'll be a wonderful tool, because I don't know how many times we've gone for legislation and we had to find out how many documents were recorded in the state of Minnesota and how many were recorded in my county. I just think it'll be a wonderful tool.
Yep. Well, let me thank the Recorders Association, Chris, with your leadership
and
to
Mako.
Make that possible.
Well, actually,
that's
Mako did it in
and
Mako Ewall
and Mako, yeah. No, that's excellent. So thank you. Great. Great work, group. Legislative budget court considerations. I guess we've talked about that. Other business items. Let me just add one other item that I should share with you. Last month, we did discuss the technology representative position on the commission. During the course of the month, I did go and I talked to two individuals whose names were mentioned at some length last month. Pam Trombo was one, and Ben Marchek was another. And I asked them what interest they had in being involved with the commission. Both indicated that, you know, they were very interested. I then also explored with Diane and Greg Hubinger and some others the idea that Janine had expressed, could we have multiple technology members that could serve, considering the fact that they don't have a member or a vote. What harm would there be in having more than one? And the feedback kind of came back, well, gosh, we've never done that before. The legislation does kind of imply, you know, a person. And the suggestion was, well, maybe you appoint one and make another one an ad hoc member in that sense. And I did not, you know, I haven't pursued it any further than that. I did choose to discuss the topic with our examiner of titles, who's not necessarily a legislative construction expert, but I said, what harm would there be from a legal perspective if we had more than one so-called technology expert, if they were, say, a half member? And he said, Mike, it's a business risk, and I don't know what risk there is. It's a risk
the
without consequences.
The pay's the same.
It's a job share.
So enamored. I don't have a problem one way or the other. I don't know that anybody would say that it is what we might describe as okay, but it's a topic that I thought I would throw out there for people to consider. If you want to do anything on it yet this month, or you want to consider and think about it, and we can talk more at it next month, or if there are other considerations about filling that type of technology position, we can deal with that at that point. But that is the other topic that I did spend some time with, and I'd love to have both Pam and Ben involved, quite frankly, for very selfish reasons. They have probably as good, if not a better, understanding than anybody in the state of Minnesota, and quite frankly, anybody in the country, about standards, the technology, schemas, hardware, software, the inner workings. They know, on top of that, not only do they know the technology, but they've learned the business. That's scary. And you don't find those types of resources very often when you've got both of them expressing, you know, an interest, would like to be a part of it. So.
And Pam and I can carpool.
Well, we wanted to have Pam here so that she'd keep telling you what to do, Jeff. Anyway.
I would think in terms of legislative construction, the whole point of what we're doing is a public service on behalf of people in the state. And if there are two people rather than one willing to help us perform that service, I mean, to me, it's just... We'd be so lucky to have them both.
That was my thinking.
So why, and I know I'm not an attorney.
Right.
but why can't we appoint one to head a technology committee, just like we appointed Jeff to head the submitters committee, and then just have that committee exist of Pam and Ben? I like to twist things all around. We just appoint one as our technology person, and then appoint them to be chairperson of a technology subcommittee that includes Ben.
I know we're kind of running over time. I just have one question. The role of the technology advisor is really to be here, right? To I don't know if it's really a subcommittee type thing where it will be work. There may be some work at some point, but there's many technical issues that we wouldn't understand that's kind of that role, right? So really
Of issue discussion we had today about validation. How does it play? Version control, communications protocol, what does that mean? Does it have a place? Those sorts of questions for all of us as an educational tool, and you're out to lunch, guys. You don't need to do that. Or, hey, you need to consider this.
That's what I'm thinking. If we just make them both, we're kind of, if one can't make it, the other one's there. And I don't know if it's really subcommittee. Like, subcommittee is where I go and try to go to the trusted submitters and that type of thing. This is kind of an advisory position.
So we could do one, appoint one, and then an alternate.
Or make it a joint appointment.
Yeah.
It says one non-voting member. The statute says one.
But sometimes if we have an opportunity that we can utilize, we can go with it. Because technically, according to that statute, then we could appoint and unappoint at every board meeting, depending on who make it,
right?
Because there's no term for them either.
Right.
But do we want to go that far?
Right.
Well, they serve at the pleasure of the board.
Right.
I mean, the commission, I should say. So.
Yeah. So, right. I think we should just have two. I was just trying to find a way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Pointable. You're chairperson.
The ad hoc, would work then as well as an ad hoc member. That member doesn't have a voting privilege, neither does the technology member have a voting privilege either. So I think I don't think you're wrong in any way you go. I think it's a pretty fair thing.
We're getting into semantics without a distinction here, is what I think we're into.
It's a job share. They each work for us half time. It's very 21st century.
I think we're a commission that needs to be more advanced, and we need to progress. I'm for one, I would say I would appoint them both to share the one position.
So moved.
And I'll second that.
It's been moved and seconded to appoint Pam Trombo and Ben Marchek to share the technology position for the Electronic Recording Commission. Any discussion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Thank you all. Any other topics?
Pam.
I'd entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second, anybody?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Thank you. We're adjourned. Passed. Congratulations, Pam.
Thank you. I have to walk
You're
off with
us.
My good pen. Usually that's what happens.